Hello and welcome to the Home Assistant Podcast. This is episode 2024.4. As usual, I'm joined by Phil. Hey, Phil.
Hey, Rohan. How's it going?
And this episode is sponsored by Home Assistant Cloud by Nabucasa. Easily access your local Home Assistant instance remotely for a small monthly fee that supports the Home Assistant and the ESP Home project. Configuration is done by user interface, so there's no fiddling with router settings, SSL certificates, or any YAML. All right. What's on deck this month, Phil?
A bit of a busy month, actually. I think a pretty decent release, 2024.4, but there's also going to be the State of the Open Home, which Paulus mentioned when he was on a couple of episodes ago. April 20, 2024 at 6 p.m. GMT, if you're awake at that time, there'll be a live stream on the Home Assistant YouTube channel, and I'm hoping there'll be some good announcements, a good opportunity for us to check in, you know, not from just Paulus, but from other people at Nabucasa and who's working on other projects around Nabucasa, you know, so ZWave.js, ESP Home, all that fun stuff. So yeah, I'm going to be looking forward to seeing the highlight reel coming out of that. So yeah, put it in your bookmarks if you can, April 20th. Watch it if you can.
Yeah, and they typically put it on kind of all channels. So just if you follow Home Assistant on any social media, they should have the both the URL as well as like the actual live stream there, right? You can live stream it to Twitter or Facebook or whatever else. So that's neat. There's going to be some interesting conversations there too. So I'm definitely going to try and catch that if I can. And yeah, you should too. All right. What else? The voice assistant community content winners. So it sounds like there were some pretty interesting things there. So if you missed it, Home Assistant ran a community contest on the best ways to use the new voice features. So they were split in kind of four different categories, right? So one was the most creative satellite ideas. One was the best starting guides, the best voice experiences. And also there was a community choice one, which is actually pretty cool.
I really like this idea of a competition. Like it was I sort of saw the competition get announced and I was like, oh, that's cool. I'll be interested to see. I haven't done anything with voice because, you know, I've got the Amazon Echo and just, you know, haven't, you know, ventured down that voice path yet. And, I saw the competition come out and there was actually some really cool entries. And I don't know if you've even looked, like there's some, even the winners, like I was like, wow, really impressed. So for most creative satellite ideas, Dirty Harry 3D printed a Bender voice assistant. So Bender
is awesome.
A character from the TV show Futurama, same creator of The Simpsons. It's a futuristic robot that is very, I think loves beer. Is Bender's, you know, whole shtick. And Dirty Harry has created a Home Assistant voice assistant that responds to OK Bender. And you can then, you know, tell it to issue commands in, you know, turn off the lights, turn on the lights. There's a YouTube video demonstration. I'll leave a link in the show notes to watch that. It looks like Bender is got every time it, and when it talks, the lights against Bender's mouth flash. That it's talking. I couldn't really hear on the, I don't know if it was text to speech that was generating it or if it was just like a pre-recorded Bender audio clip that was playing. It was really cool to see that, like as a whole unit, right? Not just a little something on the desk, you know, like a little puck on a desk. It was actually a whole 3D printed thing. So yeah, that was, congratulations, Dirty Harry. Well-deserved win there.
Which is so cool. That's actually one of my favorite like cartoons too, which is actually just hits home. That's fantastic.
Even like some of the runners ups against that category alone, like I think there was some cool Jarvis ones. There's a whole bunch, right? Like a lot of effort has been put in by the community for these. So I'm blown away.
So for starting guides, created a getting started guide, but went actually really further. So the HomeThing S3 is an iPod style remote for his home. It's got a rotary dial, a screen, IR blaster, microphone, speaker, and battery. So everything is open source. There's how do you set up the custom PCB. And obviously it's powered by ESP Home, which is actually awesome. So that's a nice one.
Yeah, I could imagine like a little iPod style remote, yeah, you know, walking around a room and selecting, you know, all right, dim the lights and having that little interface to control the lights. Yeah. That's really neat. And yeah, the fact that they get the whole guide to creating it, printing your own and yeah, doing it up. That's awesome. So Dinky, for the best of voice experience, created a system called...
It's a great username.
Yeah, called View Assist. So View Assist, it's a complete user interface and it's running on an old Android tablet. And it tries to replicate the interface of an Amazon Echo Show or like a Google Nest. Mm-hmm. And there's a great YouTube demonstration of that again. You can actually see a lot of the inspiration from like the Amazon Echo Show. I was like, oh, that screen looks familiar. But yeah, essentially, same thing, right? You can take an old Android tablet and then have it running as a dedicated voice assistant. So I believe, or at least in the demo, it was using the OK Naboo voice detect word. I don't know if you can use custom wake words with this method. But essentially, yeah, it was just running as a full screen app. Think of it like a fully kiosk. By default, it would have the time, like a clock on the screen. And then you would just say, okay, Naboo, you know, show me the weather. And up would come a Echo style view of the weather forecast from home. This is not opposed, as opposed to, you know, like an Amazon Echo having to go out and fetch their proprietary one. So yeah, it was great. And just demonstrates, you know, like that.
And no ads or anything.
Oh, yes, no ads, right? Or stupid apps like I just started playing random hot potato game just by trying to mute my Echo Show. Right? Really great one there. And once again, there's a guide up on GitHub. We'll leave links in the show notes how to get hold of that and look at the screenshots.
Yeah, that's really cool. And then the community choice was Relu, and Relu's HA Visual Voice Assistant. So basically what it is it's a voice experience that creates an on-the-fly generated videos of the characters. Yeah. So as visual feedback for Assist. So the videos that they provided is actually pretty complete. So you can change characters and language and stuff like that just through voice. Which is actually pretty interesting.
And I really like the way that, once again, a lot of those video demonstrations up on YouTube, I encourage you to watch them. This person was able to say, you know, okay, Jarvis, dim the lights, or what's the status of the lights in this room? And up would come a cartoon character, which would move the mouth as their and text-to-speech overlay, right? And it was if you were talking to a computer-generated version of a human, Jarvis. And then you could also change who the assistant was. So you could say, okay, Jarvis, now I want you to be this person and respond to this wake word. And it would change the wake word that the tablet or whatever it's running on would respond to, which is, yeah, fantastic. So, I love that one. It's actually
so cool.
All of these things have really given me like another reason to want to try and get into the home assistant, voice assistant, right? Like, just the way that, you know, how accurate things were locally, and how fast they are. I know like my family just took for the Easter weekend, we went away and, you know, my wife said to me, oh, I really miss, you know, the lady in the Amazon Echo. And I'm like, what do you guys talk about? It's like, oh, you know, we talk a lot about timers and, you know, what the time is.
You know,
there's not much else we really talk about, but, you know, I just really miss having her around on call, you know?
Sure.
I'm hoping that the voice experience can, you know, match that at least. Attempted to move over. But yeah, I'm very much looking forward to a Jarvis style, like a Jarvis do this.
That's cool.
Anyway, 2024.4. Should we talk about it?
All right, let's talk about it. Yeah. There's a lot happening.
So much, but I think the big thing, though, has to come around with, like, organizing everything, right? This has been something that we've been asking for ages. I think people have been asking, you know, a way to folder their automations or, you know, reorganize things a bit better. And this release sort of tries to tackle it in one big sweep. So there are three new ways to organize automations, entities, and all that sort of fun stuff in Home Assistant: floors, labels, and categories. So I'll talk about floors. Floors allow you to organize a group of areas together. So we've already got areas in Home Assistant where you can have all your devices that are in a room as part of, or an area, group them together as part of an area. Now you can also do another level and have floors. So you may have downstairs and an upstairs, and, you know, all your rooms or areas that are upstairs go in that area. So as part of that, now you can have those floors as well targeted. So you could have at nighttime, turn off all the lights downstairs. And that would then go into all the areas and turn off all the lights in those areas that are part of that floor. That's cool.
Yeah. So it's, and then again, you don't have to use the floors, right? So it's, you got areas, you can just stick to that if you want to, but if you want to organize it further, you can. And yeah, like you said, you can kind of do a lot of your automations, even the voice pieces. You could say, turn on my upstairs, and
boom, exactly.
Upstairs gets turned on, or first floor, or second floor, whatever you call it. Right.
Yep.
Okay. So now adding on to that, there's labels. To me, this is kind of the more powerful way, or is the most powerful way.
100%.
The way when we were talking about this on the creator's call, the way they said to think about it is floors and areas are representations of a physical space. Labels are the representation within Home Assistant. So it's a logical representation of different things. But they're like tags, or they're like labels in Gmail, whatever, right? So you can create whatever labels you want and label things as you want. You can have multiple labels. You can have, you can assign labels to areas, to devices, to entities, to automations, scripts, helpers, whatever else. And you can assign multiple labels, like I said, and you can, again, so maybe just get into some examples here. So if you say, hey, here's a label Christmas, right? And you label all of your Christmas stuff as Christmas, your automations, your Christmas devices, and so on and so forth. The nice thing is, and when you build an automation now, I can go in and say, hey, like switch to turn on everything with tag Christmas, right? So it'll go in, and anything that's tagged Christmas will go in and get turned on.
Nice.
At nighttime, right? Like whatever that looks like. Same thing from a security perspective, or bedrooms, or whatever that is, right? So, and again, from a bedroom perspective, and this is where you can kind of use one or the other or both, where you can target the area as a bedroom or something like that. Or, again, let's say we have a multi-level unit. So I have first floor, I have, second floor, let's call it, right? And from there, you can go in and say, okay, I have a bedroom on the first floor. I have two bedrooms on the second floor. Now I want to go in and I have my floor set up. So first floor, second floor, and my area set up, primary bedroom, kid one bedroom, kid two bedroom, whatever that looks like. And then now I can go in and say, so what I have is I have the physical representation of how it's actually built. But then I can actually just tag everything bedrooms as well. So now, for example, if I want to turn on all the lights across the floors in bedrooms, I can just kind of do that in one quick swoop, right? So I can say, hey, target bedrooms, and then go do that. And the same thing from an automation and scripts and helpers and stuff like that, those can get tagged that way too. One of the ones I would probably do is tag things like Home Assistant. So like anything where it's like, hey, on restart, do this or do those kind of things. So those are a couple of different examples of what you can do with labels. I love the use of labels. I label the crap out of everything in my emails. And if whatever tool I use has the construct of labels, I will find some way to use labels there. So I'm personally pretty excited for this one.
I love this. And I also hate it at the same time, because now I'm going to have to go and label everything, right?
Yeah.
Similar to you, I have like an OCD of like, oh, I just want to like label it nicely and, you know, get that nice structure in place and, but yeah, I think the examples, especially around the Christmas, you know, like just labeling everything, you know, all right, this is related to Christmas. Things like presents, you know, all right, this is related, this is an automation that's related to presents, right?
Yeah.
You know, things like, all right, this automation's, you know, all right, there's so many possibilities, right? Like, oh, here's all your automations and entities that are related to climate control or anything like that. It's going to take me like a year and I won't even be finished just to think of all the labels that I want to put in around places and filter on.
And I mean, we'll talk a little later about how it's a little more useful too in terms of how we can filter it and stuff like that. But even on like, even right now, some of what I do is like, I have like, as I'm, so I mentioned this a few episodes ago, I've started moving things to my Home Assistant Yellow and I'm currently running two instances, one in Docker and one on my Yellow, one in a VM, one in my Yellow. As I do that in the Yellow, I'm doing like a hybrid, like Node-RED slash like built-in Home Assistant automation piece too, right? Because one thing I realized when I went all in on Node-RED is, you know, we'd be talking about something in the automations pane and I'd be like, yeah, that's cool, I guess, right? And it's like, and I had no context to what we were talking about too. And I was like, okay, my simpler automations, things like that can go into there. Some stuff where I need Node-RED, then I can do it in Node-RED. Even things like MQTT based automations and stuff like that. I have custom devices that I build in Node-RED just based on MQTT. So it comes in as MQTT discoverable device in Home Assistant, so on and so forth. So I'll be dual stacking that. But even in my regular automations, I actually do like square brackets and I'll do like, that's my like pre-label version of a label or a tag, whatever you want to call it. So I'll have like production or testing or just like disabled, don't use, like broken, whatever, right? Like that kind of thing. So I can, it's not filterable, but I can just at least visually look and be like, hey, this is what I have. But now when you start getting into like hundreds of these, now it starts to get complicated, right? So depending on how complex your automations are, if you have like five or six, it's probably not a big deal.
Yep.
But yeah.
I'm wondering, like, for those that use, there's a hacks component called Remote Home Assistant, which allows you to duplicate entities from one Home Assistant instance down to another one.
Yeah.
Labels could be really powerful for things where maybe you want, like, disaster recovery, right? Or load balance, right? Maybe you could label things, right? Like, this is instance one. It's going to control all these automations entities. This is instance two. It's going to control these. And in the event that instance one goes offline, you could have like a toggle and say, all right, instance two, you now have control over everything labeled instance one as well. Right. Until that other instance comes back up online.
Yeah, I mean, it's a pretty cool concept, right? Because again, once you start being able to tag things or label things, it becomes a lot more useful, in my opinion, right? And some people might just hate that, and that's cool. You're wrong, but that's cool. No, okay. but it's, you know, it is, it's to me, it's a very useful thing. And one thing to remember here is these labels will be consistent throughout. So if I have a Christmas label, I'm going to be leveraging that same label everywhere, right? So the context actually is global in this case, unlike what we're going to talk about next.
Which are categories. So categories can be used to group things in, so for organization purposes, and are specific for a certain dashboard or domain. I guess it might be a better way to describe it in Home Assistant. So you can create as many categories as you want for an automation. You can create as many categories as you want for things like groups or whatever else. But when you categorize, you know, things, let's say you have a category for guest automations or category for bedroom automations, you can't, if you then categorize something like helpers in a bedroom, it has a bedroom, those categories, because they're not an they're you know automations, and the other ones groups, will not be applicable to each other. They won't know about each other. So that's interesting, I think. I can see categories being, I don't know if I'm going to use much of categories. I think the labels are just the way I work and my mind works. I think it's going to be better for me. I don't know. For me, maybe categories would be more like a folder structure for those automations and scripts and things like that. But yeah, for me, I think labels is where it's going to be at for me.
For me as well, I see where it comes into play. And actually, I'm gonna jump a little bit forward before I go back. So, one of the other new features this release is actually a new interface for tables. So the way where you see some of those tables that kind of come in, where like, hey, here's all my devices, or here's all of my automations, those kind of that structure that Home Assistant has for tables, has had a pretty big overhaul as well. So now there's search bars and stuff like that as well. And you have the ability to filter, and you have the ability to group by entity by entity state and things like that. So now, right? So what's cool here is I can use the previous concept. So I can go in and say, hey, categories just kind of act as a folder on the side. They're kind of there anyways, mm-hmm. right? So I can say, hey, you know what? So for my case, what I was saying about production or don't use or whatever, that might actually be a category for me, right? So my categories in my case could be production, like prod, dev, whatever I want to label it, right? Or disabled kind of thing. So that might be into my category. And unlike labels, again, we can only have one category per automation or what have you. So what that means now is I can easily filter that way, but I can also go in and filter by category and label, right? So find me prod categories in my earlier example. Find me prod automations that are also Christmas, right? Mm-hmm. Or prod categories that are also in my bedroom, right? That kind of thing. So when I start doing that, now I can get a little more results, right? So it allows you to nest a little bit there, which is kind of cool. Obviously, when you filter, you can say, hey, I want it to filter on my bedroom label and my Christmas label. Maybe I have Christmas decorations in my bedroom, whatever that looks like, right? So you could totally do that. So categories, I think, are a little, let's call it higher level. And think of it the same way as Gmail does, right? So with categories and labels, they even named it the same thing, right? Labels, tags are kind of similar constructs, but Gmail literally calls them labels and categories. So I don't know if that was on purpose or not. I didn't think to ask that on the creator's call, but that's kind of what they did. And you know, the conversation we had in the creator's call as well is around floors. So I'm like, cool. So why do I need floors? Right. So, and you know, they kind of said what I said earlier, which is think of it as physical space versus logical space or logical construct within Home Assistant. I'll probably do stuff with, like, I'll probably add floors in just so I have it. I don't know if I'll leverage them in automations. I might. I think for me, labels are huge, so I'll definitely use that. I probably will for categories, just again, like I said, because I can kind of categorize them today.
Yeah. I think labels are going to be really powerful in being with the ability to clean up a lot of condition sprawl that happens in automations. So I'm thinking, you know, you could have a label, you know, that is fill home, you know, and when I leave, I can then turn off all automations that have that label, right? Similar for, you know, like climate, you know, is it summer or, you know, hot outside only, right? And if it's not outside, hot outside, disable that automation so that the aircon doesn't kick in, right? You know, previously you would have to have, you know, all that logic in every single automation, right? Like, it's very powerful.
Well, exactly, right? So today I would have like let's say I have a good evening thing running, where you know, like, for example, in my case, I have lights dimmed at a certain level. I have like table lamps and stuff connected to smart switches that just turn on. So for something like that, maybe I might have customized different levels on there. So, but today it's one script. And then in there, it says like, okay, office room light, 30%, for example, whatever, right? Like the light bar behind me, like turn on specific thing. But for my table lamps and stuff, I can just throw a label named good evening on there on everything. And I can just say, instead of saying, hey, turn on the office table lamp, turn on the kitchen, or not the kitchen, the living room table lamp, the bedroom, like my wife and I both have one, right? So instead of saying, turn on this one and that one, it can just say, hey, you know what? Target the label good evening and switch that turn on anything good evening, right? So now I can start consolidating what some of these look like. Does that mean my entity might have a bunch of labels tied to it? Sure. But one, I don't really care because it doesn't cost me anything. Two is that actually, I know there's like, when you look at the device, it'll actually on the side, it'll say what automations it's used under, but it's also a visual thing for me to say, hey, you know what? These are actually used under these labels, right? Or under these automations kind of thing. I don't know. I might go a little too deep and start doing like good evening. So I know it's an automation versus a script, but I don't know, maybe I haven't thought that far ahead, but that's kind of where we could do some stuff. I'd love to know actually what people are doing this. If you're on YouTube, leave a comment. If you're listening to audio, then just shoot us an email, feedback@haspodcast.io.
Absolutely. I certainly think I love the fact that, you know, just going off your good evening, you know, thing, right?
Yeah.
When you get a new device that you want to add into that, you don't need to edit the automation anymore. You just label it good evening. Yeah. And the existing automation or the existing whatever script will take care of it because it's going to turn that on based on the label. So,
yeah. And
equally, if you want to remove it from that good night, you know, automation, you just remove the label from the device and it's done.
That's it. I don't need to add the device into dashboard or not or whatever. And
yep.
And for Christmas is a great example, or Easter, or, you know, whatever you celebrate, right? Like any kind of lights that you might have. You might have Diwali lights outside or Ramadan lights outside, whatever that looks like. You can tag all of those things and just say, hey, you know what? Just, I don't want this to do this anymore. Right? Or I bought this new light. I want to add it to my setup.
Bang, drop it in.
Whatever, Christmas time or Diwali time or whatever, right? So
it will get interesting when multiple labels conflict. But
100%. You got to be organized. Half the fun of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. One says turn blue, one says turn red.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, just a sec. We'll be right back with 2024.4.
Hey, everyone. I just wanted to take a minute to talk about the Eufy Video Lock. It's a smart lock that's really easy to set up with just a Phillips screwdriver and no extra drilling. It's got a keyless entry, so you don't need to worry about fumbling with the keys when your hands are full. Also, you don't need to worry about handing out extra keys when you're in a pinch, your kids losing them, or people copying the key and passing it around to each other. Something else I like about the Eufy Video Lock is that it has a camera built in and it works as a doorbell as well. Personally, I think the Eufy Video Lock is great for apartments or cottages where you can't necessarily add extra holes for a video doorbell. My favorite part about it, though, is that there isn't a monthly fee and your recordings are locally stored, so you don't have to worry about someone else owning your doorbell data. You can find it on Amazon, or if you want to know more, search Eufy Video Lock, that's EUFY Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/videolock to see how you can gain complete control of your door.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. What are some of the things you want to keep the same about yourself or your life for this year? Around New Year's, we get obsessed with how to change ourselves instead of just expanding on what we're already doing right. Maybe you finally organized your home assistant dashboard and you want to tackle another home automation project. Therapy helps you find your strengths so you don't ditch the extreme resolutions and make changes that really stick. Therapy is helpful for learning positive coping skills, how to set boundaries, and it can empower you to be the best version of yourself. It's not just for those who've experienced major trauma. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Celebrate the progress you've already made. Visit betterhelp.com/assistant today to get 10% off your first month. That's betterhelp, HELP.com/assistant. All right. So as part of the 2024.4 upgrade or new features, there's been some slight changes under the hood regarding maps and web page dashboards. So the map panel has been replaced with a new dashboard type, map. So currently, if you're on 2024.3, there is a single map view, and you click on the map and it shows all entities that give GPS coordinates, including zones, device trackers. Right now, you couldn't have multiple versions of the map because there is just one map dashboard type. So moving forward, you will now have that map dashboard, that map link has been replaced with a new map dashboard, and you can now create new dashboards as a map type, and therefore you can customize what entities would display on that map. So you may perhaps you're tracking cars or physical objects and you don't have people that you want to track. You could have a map dashboard that only displays, you know, those things, and another map dashboard for people. There's also, in the future, I'm guessing they're going to refine this a little bit, because I alluded to the fact that there was some options that you couldn't set on these dashboard types that they want to be able to get into. So I'm looking forward to that as well. Same thing for the web page dashboard. So that's going to supersede the old iframe panel dashboard. Good thing is, if you have an iframe panel dashboard or the existing map dashboard enabled, they will be upgraded to the new types. Don't have to touch anything. As soon as you upgrade to 2024.4, your existing dashboards will be upgraded to the new layout. Nothing you need to worry about. But moving forward, it's going to be interesting to see what they can do with these new dashboard types.
Yeah, that'll be pretty cool. I don't know. Again, a lot of times people are like, hey, we've had this before. Kind of, yeah.
You couldn't have two maps before. Now you can.
Well, that's it, right? Or you can have custom maps, right? Hey, here's my cars. Here's my people. Here's my, I don't know, my pets, whatever, right? It's kind of cool. So last release, we talked about the section layout, which, if you remember, was a drag and drop kind of UI that we build within dashboards there. It's been pretty cool. I've been playing with it quite a bit. There's definitely room for, you know, more features in there and stuff like that. I'm not going to say room for improvement, because it's actually pretty good for what it is.
Mm.
You know, as you kind of go through it, it's like, okay, you know, I wish it was this fixed number of columns, whatever. And that was actually the thing that frustrated me the most, where I think it was 3 columns or 4 columns or whatever it is, no matter what you do. So now there's actually a number, you can choose the number of columns you want for the section layout. So I can go in and define, saying, hey, you know what? I always want to have 3 columns here, or I always want to have 2 columns here. And that was the case before, except it was chosen for me. Now I can go in and customize it a little better, which is really nice. So that's kind of what the piece there is in the section layout. That's actually one that I'm really excited for, just to see where it goes. Mm-hmm. And that was part of the Grace webinar.
That's right.
So I'm excited to see where that project goes, or that sub project, I guess. I know they have some plans for it, kind of going forward as well, in terms of like, what can we do? I know the community's been giving feedback for that kind of stuff too. So I think there's some pretty neat things that'll come out of this.
All right. So for related items, which we were just talking about before, when you click on the information dialogue, or if you're looking at a device page, there's a related items area. So it'll show you things like what related automations, scenes, scripts, etc. That's been slightly improved. So it should provide you with some more relevant information. I've always been a big fan of that, you know, related information, yeah. like the related entities, right? Like
I use that a lot. Yeah, really yeah,
bad. Yeah. Like, oh, what automations is actually controlling this entity? So yeah, any tweaks to that is very much welcome.
Yeah, it's funny. It's one of those random things that's in there that you use that you don't realize is actually yeah. really useful. But you always are like, oh, let me. Like it's just something I would do, right? But yeah. Repairs. There's a new template function available that you can, where you can list all of your repairs or all of the issues in your repairs dashboard. So, there you go.
This is something that repairs have always been like eluding me. Same with things like notifications and all that. Like,
yeah,
I don't know. Like, it would be nice to be able to get access to those. For things like, you know, because on my dashboard, right? Like, I've in my Lovelace dashboard, yeah. I've got like a nice, you know, I can put mushroom cards up and display things right around the house. But, you know, when Homebase isn't detecting an issue, like maybe there's an integration that's got an error, like I couldn't access that. But now with this new template, it looks like I can. So, yeah, I really appreciate that.
That's pretty cool.
Shout out I should make just before I was looking at hacks to download. One of the battery, more info battery mm-hmm. panel that we're talking about in the last episode.
Battery notes, yeah.
Yeah, the battery notes. And I saw Frank's Spook integration there in hacks. And I was like, I need to go and check out what this is. So I'm going to give a shout out to Frank and his Spook hacks integration here for a minute. That originally when Frank came out with it, I thought it was a joke. Like he's like, do not install this. Like seriously, don't install this into your, like, I just assumed it was like, you know, a testing thing that he was going in and flicking, you know, random switches off and making your house spooky or whatever. But there's actually some really cool features that that integration adds to Home Assistant. So it does things like being able to create repairs of your, so you can actually yeah. raise your own repair issue. Into Home Assistant, clear those issues. You can actually then, and other things too, like create services for like enabling or disabling devices, which is really cool. I've had some issues where I've had to like reload configurations for whatever reason, like my robot vacuum would just stop updating. So there could be the ability now to go in and disable that device, enable that device as an automation. So shout out to Frank and his Spook apps. Component. Check it out if you want some more developer friendly, you know, abilities, you know, some more services to interact with Home Assistant under the hood. I'm certainly going to be checking it out.
That's cool. All right. Also, so now you can add Matter devices from other controllers. So you kind of always could ish, but it was actually very confusing. So when you add a Matter device to Home Assistant, what the current state is it'll say, hey, do you want to add it from do you want to add it new or do you want to add it from another controller? Now, the difference here is when in the past, when you used to add it, regardless what it was, it didn't give you the choice. It would just say, hey, okay, great, scan the code. So you go in, scan the code. Nowhere does it tell you that's only an operation you do for the first time. Right. So that's a provisioning operation for the very for initial provisioning. Once it's once you need to share it out to more than one controller, there's actually a different workflow, right? So what happens here now is when you click on that, it'll actually, when you say, hey, I want to add a Matter device, it'll give you that workflow. You say, hey, no, it's new, and it'll be like, okay, go scan your device, whatever it is, or type in the code, whatever. If it's already in use, so let's say I have that attached to my Google Home or my Amazon Echoes or what have you, whatever Matter controllers I have, it'll go in and you'll say, okay, for example, I'll get the option of where is it connected to. And then when you click on Google Home or Apple Home, it'll go through and actually give you that workflow to say, okay, go into here and then give us this information. So that's actually pretty nice because it caused a lot of frustration with a lot of people being like, well, I can't add my device now that it's already added to a single controller. But again, it's supposed to be a different workflow, but nowhere does it matter. On the Matter device will it tell you that, right? It's like, hey, just use this for the first time or whatever. So that's kind of neat and just make things a little better. Something else that's new too, in the lock behavior, and this is, I actually didn't know this existed. So apparently there's locks out there that will say, hey, you can go in and unlock it, but you can also like prop the door open.
Yeah.
So I didn't know this was a thing until we were talking about it on the creators call. And I was like, I'm sorry, what?
So you're saying, my mind's getting blown right now. So it just leaves the door ajar a little bit, like?
Yeah. Okay. So you can, so let's say babysitter walks to the front door. I'm outside, whatever. I'm not home. I can go in, open up Home Assistant, unlock the door. And then underneath, if my device supports it, there's actually a little button that'll show up that says open door. So you can click on that, and then the last sheet asks you to confirm, just so you, we make sure we don't like, you know, accidentally tap it or something like that. It'll say, you're sure you want to open the door? And you press it again. And if your door lock supports it, it unlocks the door, and then it props the door open just a touch.
But then you don't have to use the handle. You can just push the door to open
it. Yeah, why would you use a handle?
Because using a handle
is for suckers. Right.
Exactly.
Right. Like that. There's depending on whatever use case you have. Right. So I guess it would matter. It would be important what direction your door opens to, if it opens inwards or outwards or something like that. But yeah, that's actually something I didn't know existed.
Well, yeah. I'll be looking up that after we've finished recording and seeing how.
Well, the problem with a lot of these is there's no close function. Right. It's not motorized in any way. It's just a push open.
Yeah. Okay.
But it's like you get those dishwashers that when they're done, your dishwashers will just like open up so it vents some of the steam and whatever out, so it doesn't just condense again or whatever, right? So it's the same thing. It pushes it out, but you have to manually go in and close it, kind of thing, right? In this case, but I'm sure there's a way around that, like where if it's like, I don't know, I guess somebody can invent, hey, it's like a light magnet or something where I can just pull it back in. But I guess that would depend on how heavy the door is and blah, blah, blah. There's a lot of stuff there, but.
I wonder if there's a Home Assistant service for this opening the door, like, because obviously there's a lock unlock service. Yeah. I wonder if there's like a flag that you can set as a service call to say, you know, and also open the door. Because I'm imagining, you know, a situation where you've got like a video doorbell watching you. And if you can detect it, you're carrying bags, like if you're in a situation where you've just arrived home, coming from the car, you've got groceries in both hands, the camera sees that and it knows those conditions are true. You've just got home, you've got lots of bags in your hand. I'll unlock the door and prop it open for you. So then you can just spin around and push the door with your butt and go inside.
Do whatever facial recognition or something for an authentication to say, hey, this is Phil or.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
That would be cool. That would be very cool.
Yeah. So something I thought was actually really neat, that I didn't know existed, but it makes sense that it does. But yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Even for people with disabilities, right? Like they 100%. Need the ability to just, you know, prop the door open a little bit, not having to. Yeah, use whatever interface is currently there or whatever app is there. Yeah, that's really good.
Yeah.
All right, 2024.4, some new integrations landing. So we have Fighter, which I assume I'm pronouncing correctly, allows you to monitor your plants, which is a smart plant sensor. It measures light, temperature, humidity, and soil moisture. So pop that in. Available now in Home Assistant. Get on it.
Motion Blinds BLE. So Motion Blinds, I believe, are already in Home Assistant, but this is the BLE variant.
Nice.
So you can now control those devices by and like your whatever window coverings. So that's kind of cool.
And Alarma is a fully local AI conversation platform that can be used to create custom voice assistants. This is a really great one to see. There's a Docker container if you want to run it. It runs on macOS, Windows. I had a quick squiz at it. Looks pretty impressive.
Yeah, what's cool here is you know, with Ollama, it's like, okay, here's this something you can host yourself, right? So it's not like ChatGPT or something like that, which yours, again, you're sending stuff out to the cloud. And you actually hit the nail on the head, Phil, which is it doesn't have to be on the same device. So if I have something like a Home Assistant Yellow, let's call it, which, you know, I do right now. It's not that is not even remotely capable of running those kind of large language models or anything like that. With any kind of performance, right? So, I mean, even if I could run it, it's going to be really, really rough. It's like, just take 10 minutes to generate something, right? So, so you can, like you said, you can run it on like your MacBook or something like that and just have it remotely off. Or if you have a device that can actually handle that, with GPUs and so on, great, punt it off to there and you just provide the address of where that is. So, yeah.
Very cool.
All right, some breaking changes. So Python version bump, 3.11 has been deprecated and now it's removed. So as of this release, Home Assistant requires Python 3.12 to run. Again, if you're on Docker or supervised or something like that, it does not matter. This is if you're only running it on the device itself, like in a virtual environment or something like that.
All right. For the Ecobee, the non-functional away preset mode has been replaced with the correct away indefinitely preset mode. So if you have any automations or scripts that were depending on that away preset mode, you'll need to update it to the new away indefinitely mode.
I don't know. Away indefinitely sounds so like absolute, right?
It's
like
I know, right?
Never like, coming back.
Yeah. This person's never coming back. Never turn this thing back on for them.
AEMET or AEMET, Open Data, Environment Canada, National Weather Service, MET Iran. I apologize if I messed that up.
I think it's MET Erin.
Erin. Okay. I did not
know is. That. That's the Irish meteorological agency. Yeah.
I did not know that either. All right. I'm learning so much today. Yeah, so all of these integrations previously created two entities for each configured location. One which would be the forecast and one which would give you the hourly forecast, so daily and hourly. Now they've kind of been combined so that it creates one entity instead of two. So that'll give you your daily and your hourly forecasts. So there you go.
Nice.
All right. Cool. I think that's 2024.4. Almost at 2022. My head's 2 years behind.
Wow. 2 years late.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Cool. Well, before we go, I want to give a shout out to all our Patreons as well. Thank you very much. And also people that are sending us boosts on a value for value podcasting app. So if you want to find out how to get on one of those apps, you can go to podcastindex.org. We'll leave links in the show notes. And as well, shout out to Zellificam and Gene Bean. They've sent us over 40,000 sats, I think. Something ridiculous. Yeah. So thank you very much for that. Otherwise, we will be back with another guest episode in a couple of weeks and 2024.5.
See you soon. Cheers.
Cheers. If you want to share your Home Assistant journey or come on as a guest, reach out to us at feedback@hasspodcast.io. That's hasspodcast.io.
The Home Assistant podcast is hosted by Phil Hawthorne and myself, Rohan Karamandi. For links to topics we discussed today, check out our show notes on haspodcast.io.
Save big money at Menards. Let the fresh air in and keep the bugs out with replacement screen for your doors and windows from AdForce. It's easy to install, durable against the elements, and comes in a variety of types to suit your needs. Repair your screens today with a roll of replacement screen on sale through May 5th. And check out more great deals happening now in our weekly flyer on Menards.com. Save